Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our third part of our series of four of Parenting Today's Teens. I hope everyone is well and enjoyed the week. Just to refresh and bring us up to date, the very first week we met, we went into the world of the adolescent, of what it means to be a teen, what it's like during those tumultuous and exciting years of becoming oneself. Last week we spoke about the experience of ourselves as parents, what it's like emotionally for ourselves to experience the role of, on one hand, letting go, not controlling, but on the other hand, controlling rather than the other person or a child. Ourselves, our own reactions, our own emotions, our own responses, and being in control of those. And that really is the ultimate influence, greatest influence we can have. This week, we're going to talk about the year 2020. What it's like, not just to be an adolescent, but in this day and age, what it's like to be a teen growing up right here and right now. And that's something that is unique and distinct for our children, that we ourselves, even though we were teenagers at some point, we didn't grow up right here and right now. And the world changes. And what we'll talk about now is what are some of the unique challenges that raising children, or that being a child, growing up nowadays, encompasses and entails. And stay tuned, because next week we'll talk about the fourth and final and really most significant piece, which is bringing this all together and having a connection, a relationship throughout these years, and hopefully a relationship that builds is able to last a lifetime. So I was driving one morning, this goes back several years ago, from where I live in the Five Towns to my office one morning in Brooklyn. That's around a 40, 45-minute drive on a good day, but there's usually very few good days on the Bell Parkway, and it takes much longer than that, and I'm running tight with time, and I'm trying to get there, and I'm by a red light towards the end of the trip on Ocean Parkway, and I see that someone texted me something. I quickly take my phone to just see if it was about the appointment that I was rushing to make it in time. And I'm looking at this text by this red light. And the next thing I notice is a loud bang in the back of my car. And I'm jolted forward. And I'm shocked, somewhat thrown off. I turn around. I see there's a car that was behind me that just rammed right into the backside of my car. I'm wondering, why would someone do that? And I looked up, the light had turned green, and I was busy looking at my phone, seeing what important text message just came in. And the person right behind me, I guess, assumed with a green light, they can start going. I would also start. And they hit me right behind me. Got out of my car. Thank God there was the noise was louder than the actual damage. There was nothing. I got back in my car, I apologized to the person, and I was able to drive right off. But it shook me up, not just physically, but it also shook me up in terms of the autopilot that I was on. We're all on autopilot with technology. I was busy at some red light looking at some text message, and I needed that bang to sort of shake me out of my status quo, out of my inertia, out of just this routine. And it got me to think. I ultimately read this great book. It was called Driven or Deadly Drive Towards Distraction. I'm forgetting the title. It was a fascinating book on just the hijacking of the mind when one is texting. And since then, I think I've been perfect, pretty perfect, in terms of doing what I wasn't supposed to be doing, which is looking at a text at a red light. But tonight is just about taking a few minutes together, not just going over the cliches about technology, but hopefully together, thinking, appreciating, understanding, and hopefully also being able to implement some really effective tools when it comes to the idea of technology, and specifically with our teens, with our adolescents, as we raise them as parents. Now, there was a famous author, actually read several of his books, maybe some of you have as well. He actually died at a very, very old age quite recently. His name was Herman Wouk. Some of you have read some of his books. Winds of War, War and Remembrance, The Hope, The Glory. He wrote several other books as well. And he had a very interesting relationship throughout his life with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And when the Rebbe had passed away, so they were interviewing different people. One of the people they interviewing famous people who had corresponded with him, and one of them was Herman Wouk. And he said something very, very fascinating that I think will shed light on our discussion here tonight. He said, you know, if I had to describe how he was a very devoted and admiring disciple of the Rebbe, not the Chabad Chassid, but from a distance. And he said, you know, if we said that the world was going to be submerged, flood was coming, and all the land in the world was going to be submerged in underwater, and we presented that problem to all the leaders of the Jewish people, he says, so everyone would be, you know, wondering how we're going to get the water to stop and not come on this land somehow. He said, the way I can describe the way that the Lubavitcher Rebbe thinks is that he would be the only one, he would think in a different way. He would come up with an idea. He would say, how we're going to, rather than stop the water, learn to somehow survive and live under the water, because there is no stopping that. And in a certain way, that's a very powerful and, I think, opening thought to tonight's conversation. I think we can all agree, no matter what, that technology is here to stay. There is no stopping those waters from submerging us, right? Whether we have, right, well, we're on it right now. That's how you're watching, probably, or listening to tonight's, and that's how I'm giving this Zoom talk. And we have that in our pockets and wherever we go. Technology is here to stay, for better or for worse. And we may have differences, you know, depending on different communities, of how many windows, quote unquote, or how many doors we want to open up. But on some level, it's not about holding back the waters anymore. It's more about learning how to be able to live underwater, so to speak, to live with technology being a part of our lives, how to interact with it in a healthy way, in a responsible way, in a mature way, and in a thoughtful way. Now, to begin, let's just lay out something very, very interesting that took place several years ago. There are researchers that study the different trends of development over years and different, you know, how different generations do on different important areas of happiness or of depression or of anxiety. They like to see the trends over different generations. And usually when you study a culture or society over years, the trends are gradual. Things go up slowly or things go down slowly, depending on how society changes. And that's what happens. But the researchers see around 2006 or 2007, suddenly, instead of going gradual, certain categories shoot right up or shoot right down. There's something abrupt that takes place around 13, 14 years ago in the data. And the data we're talking about here is sadness, loneliness, levels of addiction. In around 2007, they don't just gradually increase, they sort of like almost go like vertically up. Other things like time spent with friends or time being able to sleep, those categories don't just, you know, gradually decrease or go down, but they plummet straight down. They take like a nose, you know, dive right down, 2006, 2007. The researchers are wondering why things are gradual, but then, you know, 13, 14 years ago, suddenly, again, those categories of those important categories, of levels of loneliness and sadness and addictions, they rise, and time with friends and even sleep, relaxation goes right down. And the answer is, that was around the time where phones became sophisticated enough, became smart enough to really house all entertainment, all information, and the ability to connect to everyone across the world. Those were the years where iPhone was becoming popular with other smartphones, 2006, 2007. That's when they spread like wildfire. And the trends don't get gradual anymore. Right then, that was a game changer. That was a trend exploder. And what happens is levels of sadness and loneliness and addictions were soaring. Time with friends, time resting, sleeping, rejuvenating, go straight down. And that game changer is what we're going to talk about tonight. Appreciating, understanding, discussing the impact, really understanding it, and what we can do, because it's here to stay. I want to do a short exercise with all of you, right? We're actually not just in any regular time. For many of us, for most of us, it's the time either our kids may have just gone off to school, or some of us have our kids home. Camps generally have ended the last few days, or maybe a week or so ago. School may be starting in a week or so. So it's a good time to do this exercise, right? Many of our kids are right now in unstructured times. Maybe you go away for a bit, or get ready for school, but there's a lot of free time. So here's my question for each of you. I want you to remember being off from school when you were younger, you know, the high school years, before school started or in between semesters. You had free time. You had a couple of days. You had a week off between camp and school. How did you spend that free time? I want you to think of two or three things that you would have done many years ago, you know, those teenage years when you had some time off. Just try to remember how you'd fill the time, how you'd enjoy, how you'd relax. Come up with a couple of things. Together with some friends, maybe play some ball or go out shopping with some friends to the avenue. Whatever those things are. Now, remember a couple of years ago, I had this presentation at the beginning of the school year. It was around a week or two later than now. It was like the second week of school. And I was supposed to talk to the parents and the kids about technology. And I asked them, I said, you had 2 weeks off. I said, by raise of hands, how many of you spent most of your time in your homes on your Xboxes, iPods, iPads, PlayStations? How many of you spent most of your time out, doing, going, being with friends? Which category do you think won? Which choice won? Overwhelmingly, choice A. And if we think back to our own, when I did the exercise with you a minute ago, what were you busy? how were you active? Right? What did you choose to do? Whenever it was 25 or 30 or 35 or however many years ago. Because what we have now, both a blessing and a curse, is it's so accessible and affordable and convenient, right? To just open up some technological piece of equipment, gadget, device, and engage and fill our time that way. But if you think the things that you were doing, what it robs us of, what it steals away from us, right? What's missing as a result of it. So we're going to talk now about some of the real costs and some of the real consequences. Some of it you may intuit, you may know. Some of it is a little bit more insidious. It's a little bit more subtle. So the first thing is the content itself. That's the most obvious, right? With internet, with technology, comes a reality and a danger that there's content that teens and adolescents who are developing, really any person, even if you've done developing, can get exposed to, and it ultimately really gets the brain on one hand hooked to it, especially if we're dealing with sexual content. It would be usually more of an impact on the boys than on the girls of visual stimulation. Girls will have other challenges when it comes to social media and other outlets. And what used to take us, right, time and effort and money to get our hands on, now takes time and effort and money to not see, right? We have to put things on and make sure that there are filters or there are appropriate devices that don't have access. But that's what we're dealing with. And the impact of that is, first of all, it's the biggest distortion of usually the opposite gender, what a woman is or what love is. It teaches a brain that's forming, obviously, to objectify rather than to relate to. What ends up happening is also there's a self-loathing, right? There's a shame, because on one hand there's, you know, they know intuitively as well as, you know, religiously, that it's something that's wrong. And no one feels good when they're doing something that's wrong, even if they, you know, have done it so much or they don't want to admit to it. There's a feeling deep inside, hey, I just don't feel good about myself. Right? Start to isolate, because that's a very isolated behavior, especially when it's inappropriate stuff. And there's so many people I've seen over the years, I ask them, how did you get involved in this? Or when did this start? And their answer very often is, oh, I had access when I was in high school, and parents didn't know, or I got access to that, or no one knew that. And I'd start to watch things then, and then that becomes their go-to to fill boredom, to deal with loneliness, to calm down any anxiety. What happens is when that becomes the go-to, you don't develop other healthy coping mechanisms to deal with all of those things in a healthy type of a way. We all deal with the loneliness and boredom or anxiety. Hopefully we have other coping skills. But when that's the go-to and it's so convenient and it's such a powerful escape, then it's very alluring and it's very tempting because it's so convenient and it's so easy. And therefore that's where the person goes back and back to. The person starts to feel like a hypocrite. On one hand, right, they're trying to lead some sort of religious life, and then one, then that starts to drop because no one wants to live a life that isn't, you know, aligned with one another. So therefore, if they feel this way inside, then why should they practice it? Maybe they will go through the motions, but it just creates turmoil. It creates very, very unsettled feeling that's deep inside. So that's just in terms of the content itself that they can be exposed to. Now, a little bit more subtle than that is not just the content, even if we're dealing with proper filters, the person's not seeing anything inappropriate. But there's also the process, the processing that someone has so much time just exposed to sitting on their phone or on their iPads, rather than reading a book, talking to people, using their hands, going and playing sports. There's a process that the mind begins to engage in. It's also not optimal and not beneficial. There's a story in the early years of the founding of the State of Israel. They were having a guest. This was right after, I believe, the formation of the State of Israel. And Winston Churchill was going to be visiting newly formed state, and it was a tremendous honor, and they wanted to impress this tremendous leader that was coming from Great Britain, and they wanted to lay out the red carpet. Now, they just fought a war. This was a young country that didn't have a very impressive capital building to be able to open up to receive such a high dignitary. So what they decided to do was they decided to take palm trees that weren't even naturally there yet in Tel Aviv. It was way too young to have any tall palm trees. And they brought them over from other areas, and they actually sort of stuck them right in the ground without any roots. They sort of put them in these little boxes, and they lined the entire boulevard. And at least this way, when Winston Churchill was going to come, he was going to walk through the boulevard, and there would be these tall palm trees that he would be able to walk in between. There would be at least something ceremonial and majestic and impressive for the young country to be able to receive Churchill that way. And you can imagine, he came down the boulevard, and he was walking in between these tall palm trees, and he walks up to the dais, and he walks to the podium and takes his place. And he actually was invited up to speak and say a few words. And as he begins his speech, the young children, like they do very often in Israel, they're very curious, and they always, they don't read the instructions and the signs and follow it too well. And they wanted to see him. They started to climb up. Many of the kids started to climb up these palm trees to be able to get a better look. They were, they weren't able to see over the adults right in front of them. And they climbed up these trees. And as the kids climbed these trees that didn't have any roots in the ground, you can imagine the weight. One by one, suddenly, during the beginning of his speech, a tree started to fall back, and there was a screaming kid, and they had to catch him. And a couple of them follow the first one, and palm trees are falling down. And you can imagine the humiliation for the country during that scene. This was supposed to be, our boulevard that has tall, majestic trees for many centuries growing. And Churchill was very quick on his feet. And at that moment he said, "Now you can see the importance of developing deep roots. Developing deep roots. Without roots, you just fall over." And happens with our thinking, what happens with our thinking, with our ideas, when we just think laterally, meaning when we're just surfing from site to site, and we don't really have the patience to develop our own thinking, we become people also just shallow, without deep roots in our own positions, our own opinions, and we'll see in a few moments in our relationships as well. And technology can play a role in that. Now, many of the people that work in universities, that supervise doctoral students, they say there's been a tremendous shift just in the ability of critical thinking between today's students and students from just around 15, 20 years ago. Because when you're a product, right, of not focusing, of every second just hearing the buzz and then, you know, getting back to an alert, a notice, update, a status, a notification, a message, and that's, you're bombarded, your brain isn't able to get deep in and really give thought vertically to something. It just is able to, it just goes again from window to window or from site to site or from message to message. The ability to stay focused, the ability to concentrate. So, of course, we're going to have time that we're going to spend and communicate and connect and enjoy. But there needs to be limitations. It can't be an endless activity that for many people currently is. I think the average after work time on technology is, it can be up to 5 or 6 hours. 5 or 6 hours, right? We've all seen so many clips that are really sad. Just people, right? We've been turned, unfortunately, into zombies, right? Just walking, like we're walking, just looking down, right? But these days, just talking into earbuds and responding endlessly throughout our day. And things become also effortless, right? To write a paper, so often all a person has to do is cut and paste and change enough of the words that the report is done, right? Even if we think of the examples that we came up with, how we spend time. Maybe some of us have to, you know, walk or take a bus and go somewhere, get together with friends, play some sports, actually sweat a little bit, right? Versus, you know, going down to the basement and continuing Fortnite. There's an effortlessness to the engagement of that, and that's that process that is a little bit more insidious than even the content. That doesn't mean it's evil. It just means it needs a certain amount of time and then the ability to also stay engaged and be involved in healthy behaviors as well. Another area that's strongly impacted is connections, our ability to relate to connect with, to develop friendships and attachments to one another. I remember a short while ago, we had gone out, it was a busy Matzah Shabbos, to pick up some pizza. And we get to the store, and there's actually a very, very long line. A car, realized we have to wait on the long line. So we get in the back of it. And patiently, right, we wait, slowly it inches forward. But then I see a guy who's working behind the counter, every 30 seconds, picks up the phone and says, yeah, hello, you know, whatever, pizza. And someone gives some sort of order on the phone, and he says, okay. And then that order gets, you know, processed right in. The person, I guess, will come and sort of pick up. And we're busy waiting online for our turns. And I realized, wait, why would I wait on this line? Let me just actually call and see what happens. And I call the number of the store, and lo and behold, even though there are 15 people in front of me, the guy picks up the phone, and I say, hi, I'd like to actually order a pie. He's like, oh, sure, I'll have it ready for you. I said, okay, great. You know, how long? He said, around 5 or 10 minutes. And it hit me. But that anecdote, although humorous and silly, is really the description of how we unfortunately prioritize our interactions as well. How often are we in front of or together with a person, right? So you should be my priority. But instead, suddenly someone is calling me or someone is texting me. And what do? While I'm talking to you, this person from somewhere else, right, gets my attention, and that's where I look. And that's where I go, instead of waiting, letting that person wait, and continuing with you, right? Somehow, there's a fantasy, or there's something in us that we project. Somehow, if someone is calling or if someone is texting, they'll have something more exciting or more important than just plain old you, right? You're here. I'll have you maybe in another few seconds also. Maybe not. You might just get fed up, and like often happens, I might miss that window. And as I look there, you're not interested, or you close up, or you're gone, right? So our connections, our priorities, right? The messages that we give. You know how many couples I have had over the years where technology, not just the content, but just the distraction of it, has become such a hurtful message from one another. Every time I begin to talk, she just looks at her, or he just keeps on, looking down at his phone. I could barely get his attention while I'm talking. He doesn't even hear me. Or we're sitting, we finally have some time in the car, and she's checking for this or that. Or, and there's no one more to blame. How hurtful that is for the person that's with us, right? But we'll sacrifice that person or that ability to connect, right? For the person who's calling in and ordering the pie instead of the customers that are waiting. And how we may, and how we so easily can do that, as parents to our children, right? How often do they start to talk to us, or how often do they come in and we're engaged in technology? And that would be a moment where we can potentially connect to them. We'll talk. One of the important things, most important things we can do as parents, is we can't be hypocritical. We have to be consistent, right? We can't be do as I say, not as I do. And we have to also show them, role model to them, healthy limits and boundaries. If you come into the house, sometimes healthy, just put your phone into a drawer and you'll see it in an hour or two, and engage with the people that are there, rather than just always have our pockets dinging and buzzing and always being, you know, a quarter there and 75% not there. Because we're always, you know, in the middle of some other conversation with someone else that's quote-unquote more important than people that are right there with us. So our connection may become much less personal, much less intimate. There's anonymity, right? There's safety with distance. We can feel like we're connected, like we have so many friends, right? But those relationships are so much different than sitting with a person, talking to a person. So some of the impact of technology has been just the content, the process, and also the impact on connections. Now, it's not just that there's an impact, but we'll as we'll see right now, this stuff is not just convenient. This stuff is addictive. And I'll explain why. Because what technology promises each and every one of us is exactly what we quote unquote need most in life. Think about it, right? Without saying it, your phone or your iPad, what it's offering you is ongoing excitement. What do we mean by ongoing excitement? Well, tell me which show you ever loved. Tell me which movie you ever enjoyed. I'll give it to you right here, right now. Right? Just click on Netflix, right? Click on Hulu, click on Prime, and there'll be like an endless array of just exciting movie titles and pictures. You like music? Oh, I'll give you which song? I'll give you any song you ever liked or loved or wanted to ever listen to. It's all there. Are you bored? You want something new or novel? The World Wide Web, give you everything. Right? What are you interested in? Right? What do you want to see? Where do you want to go? You're lonely? Connection? Social media will connect you. You can follow anyone. You can message anyone. You can look at the updates of anyone. You can always feel like you're part of something, connected to something. The deepest human needs are quote unquote met at a level beyond any other offering we've ever had, you know, for novelty, for excitement, for connection, for information, right? It's all there. But here's the paradox. On one hand, it's all there, but all of it, like we were discussing a couple of minutes ago, in a certain way, it offers a shadow, like almost like a hollow impersonation of each of those things. Because as we all know, right, the real connections in life, the deepest connections, right, are never going to be via technology. Right? Even though we're doing that the last 3 weeks, and hopefully all of you feel some sense of connection, hopefully to the content, and hopefully trying to give over as much as I can of myself as well. But really, the truest of friendships and connections, hopefully one day we'll be able to meet in person, right? And that won't compare to what we're doing right here, right now. Right? Our friends, right, by texting all night, every night, versus being able to go out and actually get their hands dirty and, you know, play something, and go somewhere and spend time with friends that they're texting or chatting with, doesn't compare. And I remember reading, there was a fellow, it wasn't a Jewish camp. He had run a summer program, like a week-long program. And I think he had run it, and then you know, when technology, you know, was advancing and people then one summer started to come with their smartphones, he said they had such a miserable time, you know, that one summer that it was allowed. And then he went back to saying they had to give it in. He's like, and the kids just had so much of a better time without it for that week and a half. Why? Because they actually just spent time with one another around the campfire or on a lake or playing ball versus just, you know, texting one another, whatever. So it's always the shadow. Like I was saying, it's the shadow of information. Real critical thinking and developing comes usually not just from, you know, quickly Googling something, right? So real relationships are like that. Real information is like that. And real excitement, the real moment, the greatest moments of our life is not going to usually be on Netflix, even though it's quote unquote so exciting, right? But it's going to be like with living our lives, right? In the real world. So that's what's so addictive, because it's like drinking, you know, salty water, right? All almost quenches our thirst for connection, for excitement, for information. It's almost there. We're constantly searching for it, never to be satiated by technology fully. There's a story, a powerful story in the Gemara where one of the great sages, I think his name was Rabbi Yeshua ben Rabbi Hanina. So he said he was a very smart of the Amoraim, and he said, I was never outsmarted in my life except for three times, it says in the Gemara. It says, and one of the times there was a little boy who outsmarted me. And what was the story? The story was as follows. He said that he got to the edge of the village and he met a little boy and he said, how do I get into the village? And the young boy said, well, there's two ways. There's a long, short way and there's a short, long way. So he heard that, long, short way, short, long way. Thrown off. So he said, all right, I guess, tell me the short, long way. He said, okay. Well, you walk right up this hill and then you'll see the village will be there. He's like, okay, sounds simple. So he goes right up there. And within a half hour, he's at the gates of the village, and he sees the gate is locked, and he can't get in. And he knocks and bangs on the door, and he meets someone there, and they say, well, no, this door is not, oh, yeah, you got to go all the way down, all the way around. This is not really an entrance. So he goes back to where the boy was, and he says, I got there, couldn't get in. He said, no, that's what I told you. That was the short, long way. He said, all right, well, so I'll take the other option. He said, no, the other way is the long, short way. He said, what's that? Oh, you have to travel. It's already around the whole other side of the mountain. You go through the and then you'll be able to go and get into the village. So he follows that way and it takes a day and a half. When he gets there, there's a door that's open to the city and he goes in. And he realized what the boy had taught him. It was that there's a short, long way and there's a long, short way. Right? And so that's a great metaphor in life, right? And I think very applicable to our conversation today. And as parents, we have to also remember that sometimes it's convenient and easy just to let our kids entertain themselves, and sometimes irresponsibly with technology for long periods of time. And that's the short, convenient, but long way. Doesn't get our kids where they really need to get. And then there's the long, short way. It's more effort, right? Now, you can only use your thing for an hour. Okay, and then I'm gonna have the kid bored, I'm gonna have the kid argue, I'm gonna have the kid, upset. Yeah. That's the long, but short way, because then hopefully through that there develops the ability to really connect, to really experience things. And hopefully to develop as a person. I'm going to share with you my screen. It's a very short clip for around, I think it's a minute and a half. And if you don't hear it, take a break for around 90 seconds. If you don't see it or hear it, hopefully it'll go through. And then we will go into discussing that for a moment. So I am going to do that right now.
At dinner with your friends and you're texting somebody who's not there, that's a problem. That's an addiction. If you're sitting in a meeting with people you're supposed to be listening to and speaking and you put your phone on the table, face up or face down, I don't care, that sends a subconscious message to the room that you're just not that important to me right now, right? That's what happens. And the fact that you cannot put it away is because you are addicted. Right? If you wake up and you check your phone before you say good morning to your girlfriend, boyfriend, or spouse, you have an addiction. And like all addiction, in time, it'll destroy relationships, it'll cost time, and it'll cost money, and it'll make your life worse. If you're sitting at dinner with your friends, and you're texting somebody who's not there, that's a problem. That's an addiction. If you're sitting in a meeting with people you're supposed to be listening to and speaking, and you put your phone on the...
Okay. So, we are back. So the point there, that was an author, Simon Sinek. He was just making the obvious point that I think that we emphasized throughout today, which was the prioritizing again, or the unfortunate upside down prioritizing that unfortunately technology lures us into. And the appropriate label for many of us, which is we become addicted, not only to inappropriate content, but addicted to technology in and of itself. We have to be aware. We have to be aware of the limitations that we set for our kids as well. So what do we do about all this? Right? We've discussed the impact, we've discussed the reality. So in the remaining few moments, I would like to suggest some points that hopefully can be a bit more practical. First of all, we can't just impose, I don't think it'll be as effective if we just come down on teens or adolescents or any child per se with laws and edicts. What works better always is a conversation, discussion, and then through that to explain in a softer type of way what the limits are, why they are. And we may get strong reactions to it or disagreement. That's okay. But at least it gives the potential to have some common understanding with one another, what the reason is and why it makes sense. Actually, a couple of years ago, I was asked to run a panel on a video called Screenagers, Screenagers. It was a documentary about how technology is impacting teenagers and the struggle that parents have to set limits, etc. So I wanted to watch the documentary before I joined the panel that was being presented at. And I watched it with my teenage daughter one night. And it was wonderful. We were able to sit and discuss the video, the points that were made, and I still recall the power of that. My daughter came over and said, "Oh, here's my phone, by the way. You can just make sure to put the limitations or whatever that they ended up discussing on that video." It was like almost like self-understood, obvious from that. So that's just might be an interesting thing to watch together. But at the very least, to be able to discuss some of the realities, maybe some of the things that we discussed here, or some of the things that you can pick up elsewhere, just information and the reality, the impact. There has to be some healthy limits that we as parents responsibly set regarding technology to our kids, and that includes filters, monitoring system, time limits, right? I think that depending on the piece of technology that your kids have, there should be a time where they either take the device and put it into your room or closet and take it back again the next morning or the next night. You can put the time limitations on many devices with parental controls where it shuts down. These are all actions, you know, these are all musts. These are just basic levels of responsibility. You can have all three. There can be some level of monitoring, filtering, as well as time limitations. We need to also be great role models in this area, right? I'm saying that again, I'm repeating myself, but that's the most powerful thing. If we're able to show our own children when they're talking that we're not always engaging in something else, we're able to put that down and look at them in the eye, right? I find that today the most valuable gift you can give someone is, imagine if your phone is buzzing or ringing or something, and you don't even interrupt because it shows how important that other person is. That's how rare it is to not let oneself be interrupted. That's the biggest sign of respect if you're able to do that to someone else. We can give that gift to our children, role modeling that, limitations with ourselves, and not always just, you know, being distracted with something or someone else. In closing, I think the most powerful thing is really, you know, what we're going to talk about next week for our entire final episode, and that is a real connection. There's a story the Gemara says where there were seven oceans, right, that were standing in the way of a certain person who had a temptation to do a sin. And it says that that wasn't enough to stop him, right? Belozer ben Dodai, right? That was his name. And it says that in the Gemara, he crossed all seven seas, all filters and all monitors and all barriers. Like we know, those aren't the most effective things to stop someone who ultimately has this great temptation to do what is not necessarily beneficial. And yet we know a different character, which is someone in the Chumash, Yosef, who is in the clutches of temptation, right? And yet he is just the opposite. He's able to, you know, break away from his jacket that he's wearing and run out. Some person has seven seas, he's able to cross them all, and, right, and sin. The other person, you know, sin is holding on to him, he's able to run out. And we know that powerful teaching that our Chazal teaches is that it was because the image of his father came to him that moment, right? And in the context of what we're talking about, we can explain it as follows. It's because when there was a real connection that came up in his mind, the shadow of some passing, fake, superficial relationship didn't hold up, right? When he was making that comparison, like Coke told us in the commercials, nothing beats the real thing. Nothing beats the real thing. And therefore, that was ultimately the greatest and strongest energy and ingredient that was able to hold that child back, Yosef, from looking, going, acting how he wasn't supposed to. And it's incumbent on all of us as parents. We can't control, like we discussed last week, perfectly. But what we can do is we can at least be that image in our sons and in our daughters' minds. That's where I have this real connection. That's that person that really thinks, really cares, really feels, really thinks every moment. Not just because it's good for them, but it's good for, you know, how it's good for me as a child. When they feel that, when they experience that, and over time, not always quick fix, it's the what we'll call the long short road, but over time, then It's our image that comes up at the critical points in their lives. And what we will talk about in our final week next week is the formation and the development of the connection between ourselves and our kids, and how we can nurture that, how we create that, how we can hopefully sustain that over the course of our entire lives. So we are going to hold it here, and wishing you all a wonderful week until next week, when we continue with our final meeting about that connection between ourselves and our kids. Thank you. Have a wonderful week.